Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Got to tell you about the Relief and Recovery Cream from Escape Artist. It's the highest awarded topical brand in Colorado that prioritizes quality and consistency. These creams will guarantee to help penetrate for deep muscle tissue discomfort that's fast absorbing. And my favorite part, they're not going to ruin your clothes or sheets. They are not greasy, but you can find them at any of your 11 Denver metro area Lightshade dispensaries. Lightshade, man, they've got a great selection of cannabis concentrates, top shelf flower edibles, tinctures, accessories, and more. And now, when you use code DNVR, podcast listeners, you can get 25% off all non-sale items. Shop online at lightshade.com for your pickup or visit a Lightshade location near you. That's your first pitch. Now let's play ball. Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Now, when you use code DNVR at sign up, you get some special offers, like how a $5 bet on any winner is going to turn into $150 in free bets this NBA postseason. Again, with code DNVR, a $5 bet on any winner gets you $150 in free bets. That's on DraftKings Sportsbook. I'm your host, Patrick Lyons, and joining me today, as he does each and every week, the voice of the Colorado Rockies for AT&T Sportsnet, the host of the Drew Goodman podcast. It's our good buddy, Drew Goodman.
Patrick, how are you, my friend?
Doing okay. We're doing okay. We survived the snowpocalypse of May 2020, 2022. What year is it? It's hard to know, but feeling good. Feeling good. How are you feeling out there in Pittsburgh?
I'm good. I just got my workouts done, and it's a nice day today. I'm looking out over my shoulder at downtown Pittsburgh, and it's pretty day. Should be nicer than it was last night. Last night was kind of cool, chilly, overcast, and the game was kind of cool, chilly, overcast.
Very true. Very true. Yeah, you know, sometimes those trips to the East Coast, you think you're going to get a little bit more oxygen, you know, more red blood cells. It's going to be good for the recovery when you live at altitude. But unfortunately, they did put Pittsburgh and D.C. back-to-back, and those press boxes and the booths that you guys have to broadcast from, you're still technically at altitude. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. in fact, I saw some lower flying aircraft that were beneath our broadcast location, and Washington's even higher. So we can bitch about that, which I'm fond of doing. When a couple thoughts, when you come to the Midwest and or the East, you just assume if it's a week-long trip, you're going to have like the underovers, you know, 2.5 rain delays, right? So whenever you can get through a week in those cities without a rain delay, you're like, good. So the Rockies are 1-for-1, no rain delay. I don't think we're going to have an issue tonight. Fingers crossed. That's one of the thoughts. And, you know, overall, and more importantly, when the Rockies had a tough homestand, as we know, 3-6, Patrick, and you know, you've been breaking it down. You lost 2 of 3 to Kansas City. That was sinful, right? You know, you look back, you go, that's a team you got to beat at home. Giants, good, though they've taken on water again of late. They've lost 5 straight. You'd like to be able to win a series against the Giants at home. The Mets are playing good baseball. So you lose 2 of 3 to all three of those teams. You're going on the road against two teams that are struggling in the Pirates and the Nats. And you want to get healthy again and hopefully return where you're above 500. And last night was just, you know, kind of a lackluster, typical Pittsburgh game, Patrick, typical game in Pittsburgh for the Rockies through the years.
Yeah, I don't know if you got a chance to catch up with Buddy or anything, but JT Brubaker, this is his second time. Like last year at Coors Field, he had 6 shutout innings. So he obviously just has a certain pitch mix that can impact the Rockies. So yeah, that was a close one that they had a couple opportunities. I thought the turning point was going to be that play at the plate where, I don't know if you realized it, but the Rockies have had an overturned call in 3 consecutive games, or 3 consecutive days, game 1 on Saturday, the Sunday's game, And then on Monday, the play at the plate. But unfortunately, that wasn't the turning point, because they would still end up going down to lose 2-1 to the Pirates there.
Well, too frequently, when the Rockies have come to Pittsburgh over the years, Pirates could leave the field, and I don't know if the Rockies could score. And the Rockies had 7 singles last night, and really 3, maybe 4 of them were hit hard. I mean, there were a couple infield hits. There was the, you know, Hilliard hit the ball hard his first 2 times, and then he had the pop fly single to left. You know, there was only a handful of balls that were sharply hit the whole night. And historically, that's been the situation when the Rockies come to PNC Park. Now, hopefully tonight will be better. But last night's game for both sides matched the weather. It wasn't well played defensively. As poorly as the Rockies have played defensively, the Pirates have actually played worse. They've been the poorest team defensively in the league. So, yeah, you know, you just – we say this all the time in baseball. You put it behind you and hopefully you have a better day today and start playing cleaner baseball.
And momentum is the next day's starting pitcher, although I don't think we know who Pittsburgh's going to be throwing out on Tuesday. On Wednesday, it seems like all signs are pointing to Ryan Feltner to get his second start of the season. He obviously is with the team right now, so that looks to be the move there. And you hope he can have, you know, about as much success as he did in Philadelphia, because he was okay. Just that whole series, the defense really let him down.
Well, I'm excited about watching him pitch, because as opposed to somebody you bring it up to be, the proverbial emergency starter. I mean, yes, ostensibly that's what he's doing right now, but there's a lot of upside with Ryan Feltner. I mean, he's got, plus fastball. He's got, a good breaking ball. I think that, and he's got a toughness to him. I'm intrigued every time he gets the baseball, because the Rockies have to develop, more starting pitching. They have to develop more pitching in general. Every team does. So I'm looking forward to watching him throw the baseball again on Wednesday.
One guy we're not going to see throw the baseball is Robert Stevenson. Obviously, the news came out on Monday that he had hit the COVID IL. But also, it sounds like from a lot of the reports coming out of Rockies camp, if you will, is that he might be able to come back from this sooner than the 10 days, almost as if there's something built into the protocols, which I don't have memorized by heart, that there's an ability to say, well, actually, you know what, if you get enough negative tests in a row, and if you were erring on the side of caution and you don't put a guy on a plane because he may have it, but it turns out he doesn't, Stevenson may be back sooner than the 10 days, because we know he's already been on that COVID IL once before this season.
Yeah, I can't recite the protocol to the letter of the law. I think it's something along the lines of, 2 negatives within 48 hours, something along those lines. So hopefully, because Rob, Stevenson was on the COVID list at the start of the year. We'll see what happens with that. Speaking of injuries, it looks like, Chris Bryant may be going back on the shelf also. We'll see.
Yeah, that was something that I put at the top of the list to talk about. Like, should we be worried about Chris Bryant? Obviously, the cortisone shot seemed to have helped. I've had 2 rehab games with the Isotopes in Salt Lake against the Salt Lake City Bees, or the Salt Lake Bees in Salt Lake City, and came back, was able to play on Sunday and in game 1 in the doubleheader. And you thought, okay, he's good to go, but then got scratched from Monday's game. And obviously, if there's going to be those back issues, and that's at the heart of it, that the back is the heart of the body. I don't know if that's a phrase or not, but it's what it seems to be true. And yeah, that's a bit frustrating, unfortunately, that the start to the Bryant era has been going this way when they need someone with his kind of presence in the middle of that lineup.
Well, they didn't sign him just to make a splash. They signed him because the Rockies had to get a lot better offensively. And unfortunately, he hasn't been healthy. I mean, he played the first couple of weeks or so of the season, and, he was throwing out his hits, but, hadn't gotten going yet in terms of the power department. And he missed 3 weeks, came back for a couple, and now, if this is going to be another, we'll see. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but, potentially another lengthy situation where he's out. Not good for him individually, and certainly not good for the club, because you're taking out the guy that you had put in the 3 spot. Buddy wants to have him in that 3 spot, most of the time.
Yeah. Can you recall any, you know, players who have bounced back from an injury like this? Again, I guess we don't really know the severity of it. I mean, neck injuries are really bad. We know that ended Prince Fielder's career. And so, you know, we're a long way from saying anyone's career is over, but I guess there are just varying degrees of having those back issues, being able to play through it, and then just having back issues so severe that it can end your career abruptly, somewhat like a David Wright who kept, you know, battling back from it, but it really took years off of his playing career.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very, very, you know, leery of having any discussion about injuries. Obviously, I'm not a doctor. I don't know specifics of his injury. When you talk about a back, that's a wide range of things. I believe that what ended up curtailing David Wright's career was spinal stenosis, if my memory is right, which is, you know, completely different from what I believe is going on with Bryant. But it would be so irresponsible, you know, for me to wager an opinion as to what's going on there and compare it to other guys and other backs. I mean, the first guy I thought of when you mentioned that was Clayton Kershaw. They play a different position. You know, Kershaw's dealt with back issues the last several years, and, you know, he hasn't been able to play a full season, but we've also seen him come back and pitch, you know, at the highest of levels, you know, after rest and rehab and that sort of thing. So we'll see. We'll get more information here in the coming days, and you know, keep your fingers crossed. They can figure it out. But, you know, the one thing I will say or quote is, it's a regurgitation of something we've heard many times from, you know, trainers and even doctors that backs are tricky, right? Backs are tricky. So we'll see.
Yeah. It's just a wide range. Like, obviously the best scenario is no one is hurt and you don't have to speculate about, yeah, is this the end of someone's career? Are they done for the season and they'll be back and they'll be fine? Are they just going to miss a couple weeks or is it a couple months? If you're healthy, you don't have those questions, but you're right. It's just going to take time for us to kind of figure out. And it's frustrating, obviously, because, you know, for Bryant himself, where he signs this deal, he wants to be with Colorado. He wants to be that leader. He said Ben Zobrist was that guy when he came to the Cubs and what he was able to do and elevate the team to that next level. And you see where the Rockies are at right now and you go, boy, they could use a veteran presence like that to elevate them to the next level. That's Bryant. And unfortunately, you know, he's banged up in this way. So he's frustrated by it. Team's frustrated by it. Fans are frustrated by it. But, you know, unfortunately you do just have to take it day by day in this instance.
Yeah. I mean, you need more than the whole leadership thing, because I think, you know, that happens organically, and sometimes it doesn't have to be one individual. You need another really good player. You need and that's why they signed Chris Bryant. And last night's game is a perfect example. If somebody ran into a ball and hit it out, maybe after, you know, somebody had the bloop single or a walk or whatever, and, you know, a two-run home run, a night you don't play well and you escape with a 3-2 win. Well, Chris Bryant, you know, historically is, you know, as a guy that would be a strong candidate to produce that kind of hit on a given night, you know, more likely than some others. So that's where they're going to miss him most of all. But we'll see. We'll learn more, I'm sure, later in the day. And that'll be speculative also, because you won't know until, you know, rehab takes place. You won't know until, you know, the medical, you know, folks do their thing and we'll see. Keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah, for sure. One guy who is healthy right now, and I wanted to get your take on, because this was a very much a fun story over the weekend, but Brian Servin, who, you know, he makes his debut last week, gets the promotion to the big leagues for the first time. And then in his second game, not only does he record his first base hit, it's a homer, but he homers again, two home runs in the same game to start out his career, evoking, you know, Trevor Story to a degree in that capacity as far as great moments. And his first home run actually ended up being the lead flipper, gave the Rockies the lead once and for all. It was 4-3 at that point. So that was such a big spot. How nice is that, you know, covering debuts? Everyone loves debuts. Everyone loves to see a guy get his first hit. For it to be a homer, I know you must, you know, really like those kind of moments, and they stand out in a very, very long baseball season.
Yeah, you know, I didn't get to witness it. I was with my middle son watching him play, but great stuff. I'm really fond of Brian Servant. I got to spend a little time with him during spring training, get to know him a little bit. You know, he's a bright guy. He's a guy that I guess the best way to characterize it, he has a good understanding of life and where baseball kind of fits into his life. And you know, I he's a really good player and he wants to make it very badly and he's talented. But he has perspective that he's not going to be defined by, you know, whether or not he goes, you know, 2 for 4 that night and whether the game spits him out, you know, a couple of years from now. So I was really impressed when I got to spend some time with him this spring. And I spent some time with him yesterday, kind of congratulated him because I hadn't seen him, and the fact that his family was there and, you know, you got to really soak in the moment. Those are special times. We talked about it before, Patrick. I know all managers really appreciate debuts, and I think that Buddy in particular really appreciates giving that opportunity and watching how it unfolds, because you know, Buddy remembers and recalls when he made his own debut and when he witnessed other ones. So I think he handles it really well. And you know, Brian Servin's always going to be a guy that's well liked by teammates. So yeah, it was special, man. That was fun.
Yeah, the debut really is it's the peak of the mountain. I mean, it's what every young ball player or every young professional athlete hopes to get. And if you get it, I mean, that could be the biggest moment of your career. Not everyone, you know, has a great season, is an all-star, is a Hall of Famer. So that first moment, you know, is special for 99% of the players out there. Of my day that I got to go to the show and I got to share it with everyone too. Because how often are the teams, you know, flying in family members and, you know, fiancés, all that stuff? So it really is just kind of the pinnacle of. It's a culmination of a career and all the people that helped get you there. And so that, yeah, that definitely stands out. So it makes sense that it would be so special. And yeah, Buddy obviously understands that. He's seen it from all perspectives. So it never gets old hearing those great stories.
Well, I'm big on enjoying the moment, trying to truly live in the moment. I know that's a cliche, but it's important to do that. And it's important to understand and appreciate accomplishments. And regardless of whatever happens in Brian Servant's career going forward, no one can ever take away that day. No one can ever take away that moment. No one can ever take away the work and perseverance it took to achieve the opportunity to have that moment. So, you know, take that, appreciate it, and know that everything beyond that's icing on the cake, right?
Yeah, and you know what? No one can take away the Colorado Avalanche's 3-1 lead on the St. Louis Blues. We've got to mention that, of course, because we've got watch parties popping off for these Av games Wednesday night. It's going down again on the corner of Colfax, New York, at the DNVR bar, where if you're a member, you get a member-sized beer. You get that mega pint, little something extra, a little bonus for you. Extra raffle tickets at that watch party so you can win some free gear. You know, you get access to our members-only Discord, where we're talking about a couple things that we might not go forward with on the DNVR.com or on Twitter. And you can also meet some great people, make some new friends, where you talk about other topics besides sports. If you're not a member, don't fret. It's only 50 cents for your first month on the DNVR.com. And if you're ready to go all in for that annual membership, guess what? You get a free shirt at DNVRlocker.com as well. When you're getting your member-sized beer, hey, if it's a Breckenridge Brew at the Avalanche Ale, perhaps, it's a good choice because your hometown craft beer of the Colorado Avalanche is celebrating this historic winning season with people who have supported this community through such a challenging year by giving away Avs tickets to a pair of community stars each home game during the playoffs. And this includes the Stanley Cup Finals. Yes, they're giving away tickets for you. We invite you to nominate a stellar community member that you know and an Avs fan who should get the tickets to celebrate at a playoff game this season. Now, each home game, we're going to hook up a fan and a friend with tickets, gears to match, and of course, the drink of the season, Avalanche Ale. Breckenridge Brewery is also going to donate a portion of all proceeds of sales of Avalanche Ale through the playoffs to the community fund Boulder County. If to benefit those Marshall Fire victims. Visit breckbrew.com to nominate a community star and send them to an Avs playoff game. The NBA playoffs are still going down. Now, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA, is still trying to keep Nuggets fans in on the action. New customers right now, you can bet just $5 on any team to win, and you get $150 in free bets if they do win. Also, the same game parlays right now are particularly nice. That's when you combine multiple bets from the same game for a bigger payout. I say it's really nice because when you place the same game parlay each day with three or more legs, you can get $25 back if one of those legs doesn't hit. Hedge your bet. Why not? Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code DNVR. Bet $5 on any NBA team to win their game during the play-in tournament and get $150 in free bets instantly. That's promo code DNVR at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Must be 21 or older, Colorado only, new customers only. Minimum $5 deposit. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. All right, Drew, have you ordered your nasty Nazim Kadri shirt from DNVR Locker yet? I mean, after his hat trick, he's somewhat immortal now, I think, in not only Avs hockey history, but in just Colorado sports history. Talk about a clutch performance on multiple levels.
That was one of the more unbelievable and apropos outcomes for me that I've witnessed. I mean, I couldn't have been happier. I respect the hell out of all athletes and the people who play hockey in particular, and the toughness and the code. And, you know, Nazem Kadri had a reputation, and he earned that reputation for, you know, being at times a quote-unquote dirty player. And we saw it last year against the Blues on a bad hit. He has, you know, gone to great lengths to kind of change that reputation this year. And the play that injured Bennington was not a dirty play. I listened to a lot of hockey folks, and removing the bias because I want to see the Avalanche win the Stanley Cup. But that was not a dirty hockey play. The puck was loose in front. It was unfortunate Bennington got hit, just like it wasn't a dirty hockey play that injured Sam Girard and broke his sternum, and he's out for the playoffs. Some of the vitriol, or a lot of the vitriol, that was directed in toward Kadri and racist in nature. There's no place for that, clearly. And I thought it was so fitting that he was the best player on the ice in leading the Avalanche to a 6-3 win, and had just the second playoff hat trick in the history of the Avalanche, who have a storied history, as we know. It was awesome, man. It was awesome.
Yeah, really, really cool moment for him to be able to have that. And as you said, yeah, fans being, well, they're not being passionate. We understand there's a difference between passion and just kind of blind rage, like you said. I brought that up partially because I was somewhat surprised to, I spoke with a couple of players this past week during the homestand, and they actually said, we know New York, Philadelphia, Boston, those fans can really get on a player. But this guy that I talked to said that the fans in San Francisco were relentless. And I was a little bit surprised by that. I wouldn't have guessed that Giants fans or that San Francisco vibe would have been up there with Philly as far as being like, damn, talking about my mom, you know, talking about my significant other, all those things. And is that something, you know, do you have a tiered list and in cities that can really generate a player?
I defer to the players, especially outfielders, because sometimes they're out in, you know, where the seats are less expensive. I'm not saying that decorum becomes less with cheaper tickets, but sometimes it does. And I suppose, you know, I've seen people when I was doing the NBA in $5,000 suits acting like complete jackasses. And so it's not necessarily a monetary thing, but the outfielders, I think, can hear it because they're isolated. You know, I've heard that San Francisco can be rough. I know for a fact that, you know, Dodger Stadium can be rough. you know, Philadelphia has, you know, a reputation. Boston has a reputation. This is what I truly believe. There are jackasses everywhere and people who cross the line from being an ardent fan to being so obsessive and living, you know, and kind of removing themselves from their daily lives and then planning themselves and, you know, like the outcome matters in their life. Yeah, I get passion. I get wanting to see your team win. But at the end of the day, you have no control over it. And, you know, people lose their minds. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's strange because we welcome that kind of passion, but then at some point you get to that line that you should not cross, and it's you can get right up to it. You know, we know you can get right up to it, and then once you cross it, it's too late at that point.
And Patrick, hockey breeds that a little bit because hockey is a violent sport. Hockey's a sport of toughness. Hockey's a sport. Well, if we have a score to settle, it's within the confines of the rules for you and I to have a fist fight, you know, in the middle of the ice. So. You see that boil over at times into the people who are watching and supportive of one team or another. And then their actions or their verbiage or their words now on Twitter and Instagram become language and such that shouldn't be used. And you know, it becomes an ugly situation. But when it came to playing the game, which the guys for the Avalanche were playing the guys from the Blues, and the guys from the Avalanche in a, you know, hostile environment stepped forward. They were the better team. And Nazem Kadri arguably was the best player on the ice and did not retaliate, which is hard. It's hard to, I mean, that the thing that drove me nuts a little bit, again, I'll put my fan hat on, is the 5-on-3, the two roughing minors that were called when Kadri was attacked from behind. That's a game misconduct and should be a suspension. If that happens out on the street, it's assault. Kadri, I mean, his back was turned. I mean, it was awful. Anyhow, I digress. The story of the night was Nazem Kadri and producing a hat trick and all great goals too. I mean, weren't like, you know, two were an empty net or late. It wasn't anything like that.
Well, the Rockies did their part to not take attention away from that. So
yeah, they did.
Got to give them some credit. Well, with baseball, you know, there was a time where there would be that kind of policing and like, hey, this isn't great, but it's allowed. I don't know how much policing really goes on in baseball now because we've seen a shift in the last couple of years of these unwritten rules kind of going away and let the kids play and players celebrating. And in the past, what would have seemed like showing up another player, showing up the opponent. And now, you know, that hasn't really been the case. And I think that's been to baseball's benefit. To my knowledge, I can't think of any real ways of that kind of policing. Maybe within a clubhouse, you know, I don't want to say call it hazing, but, you know, you show the young guys the ropes just a little bit. But on the field, there isn't that kind of policing quite as much anymore. It's definitely been reduced in recent times, it seems like.
Well, I mean, it used to be, you know, you'd dot a guy, right? And or going hard to second and, you know, if that sort of thing to send a message. And but that kind of or hit the catcher, those things have been taken out of the game for the most part.
Yeah, they really have. You talked about, you know, the Mets a little bit and the Giants. I was curious to get your take on in seeing those guys a little bit up close, a little bit from afar. Did you get the sense as to, you know, it could this be an NLCS matchup? Obviously, the Dodgers will like to have something to say about that. Same with the Padres. But one team better than the other, and maybe the Giants' recent, you know, troubles will slant it one way or the other. But both Mets and Giants take 2 of 3 from the Rockies at Coors Field. Did you get a sense that one club is better than another?
I think everything went right for the Giants last year. I do like their pickup of Carlos Rodon. I think they have a really good rotation. I don't love their position players. I think the Mets are better from a position player standpoint. I think if the Mets are healthy, one day in the second half of the year when they're rolling DeGrom and Scherzer. If that occurs, now both are hurt right now. If that occurs, I think the Mets are a much better team. I think the Dodgers are a better team than the Giants. I haven't seen the Padres up close yet, but I suspect that the Padres potentially are better than the Giants also. So I'm not saying the Giants, it's baseball, right? You never know what will occur. Just like we talk about in hockey with a hot goalie, you don't know what will occur. Look how good Florida was this year, and they just got swept by Tampa in the NHL playoffs. So in terms of a preview, which your question was of the NLCS, if somebody said, who do you see right now? I think the Mets are a better team than the Giants, and I would pick some other teams in the National League ahead of the Giants to be that other team potentially that, you know, would be fighting for a National League pennant.
I would agree with that because it does seem as if, you know, the Giants are a poor man's version of the Dodgers, where they're kind of doing a lot of similar things together. Dodgers do avoid those five-game losing streaks, but you can't name anyone on the Giants roster. It's strange. They're still getting the best out of those guys, and that's great. But the Mets, on the other hand, you know, they got Buck Showalter. Like the manager is a real key element, I think, to this. As you said, Mets are going to get back, you know, two aces. It's kind of a similar situation with the Rockies, where if they can hang in there long enough, you know, maybe acquire a player or two on the lower tier level, not a superstar, but acquire someone in a trade in July when they get back Chris Bryant. Hey, that's another acquisition that's going to allow you to be a little bit more hopeful about the Rockies season going forward. But Buck Showalter is man, he is a very good manager. I will say that. It was interesting sitting in on his pregame conferences and hearing how his mind works and some of the things that he said and how he prepares his players too, each and every day, breaking out a different rule or a different wrinkle or loophole that you can use to exploit and gain an advantage in the game. He's something.
Yeah, he's a very good manager. He's had that reputation. It's been a deserved reputation. However, I will always say this, whether it's Buddy Black or Buck Showalter or Dusty Baker or, you know, Tony La Russa, or go to other sports, you know, Phil Jackson, all those, you know, great teams in Chicago and L.A., you got to have the players. I'd be a pretty good manager, too, if I'm rolling out Max Scherzer on a Sunday afternoon. You know, you're a better manager if you're Aaron Boone when Stanton and Judge are healthy and, you know, you have that lineup in New York that you can roll out. So yeah, Buck Showalter's really good. I'm not trying to, in a backhanded way, slight him at all. And I thought it was a really good move by the Mets, who were ready to win now, especially after, you know, Steve Cohen went out and spent the kind of money he did in getting Scherzer and the kind of roster that they have compiled, that you want to have somebody who's been there and done that on the top step of the dugout. Now, I say been there and done that, you know, Buck Showalter has never managed a World Series team, not yet at least.
But every team that he has managed, except the last stint with the Orioles, the next year they did go to the World Series. Was done in 95 with the Yankees. Then Joe Torre leads the Yankees to the World Series in 96. Once he's done in Arizona, Bob Brenly takes the Diamondbacks to the World Series in 2001. And then I think he was done in Texas in 2009 before Ron Washington went to those World Series with the Rangers. So he's got a magic touch. We'll see if it actually comes to fruition with him in charge now.
I'm not trying to be dismissive of leadership. I'm a big one on leadership. You know, I think the world of Buddy Black. You know, Bob Brenly, he's been in broadcasting a long time. Bob Brenly did a really good job in 2001. But Bob Brenly could go, hey, who's going today? Schilling. Okay. Who's going tomorrow? Randy Johnson. Okay. I mean,
who's going to game seven? Both those guys. Great.
Right. That's pretty helpful. And those guys would say that. If Bob Brenly was on this podcast, would say, you know, I'm a whole lot smarter when I can hand the baseball to the big unit. So Buck Showalter is a good manager, and Buck Showalter is very thorough, and you alluded to this, in understanding all the rules and the nuances of the rules and how you can, you know, utilize them potentially to your benefit. So I think back to Joe Torre, somebody you mentioned. Joe Torre was not well thought of as a manager until he arrived in New York. Not good with the Mets, right? They didn't win. Not great with Atlanta. They didn't win. And then he arrives in New York and, you know, they end up with the core four and, you know, he's a legend.
Yeah, that's true. It does have a lot to do with the roster. One of the guys on the roster that I got a chance to catch up with a couple of us, we were all trying to talk with Adam Ottavino, and you know, he was deployed twice there at Coors Field. That was his first time back. We were all thinking, wait, is this his first time? And you go, well, it's been like 4 years. We know they've played the Yankees, you know, that next year after he left in 2018, but the Yankees had never come to Coors Field. So that was the return of Adam Ottavino. And has he always been a pretty open and honest person? Because he definitely seemed to be that way. And in talking about, you know, one of his good buddies in Scott Oberg and what the fans are like at Yankee Stadium and Boston, how quick they can flip on you and flip back, all those things. I'm sure that you'll be looking forward to catching up with him in New York this summer for sure.
Deep thinker, smart guy, interesting background. Biased. I'm a New York guy. He's a New York guy. So I've always liked Ottavino. And Scott Oberg's the same way. I think you've gotten to know Scott Patrick. You know, he's got takes and thoughts on more than just how to spin a slider in life. And so I find those guys, you know, interesting to visit with. And Ottavino's that guy. And Ottavino has carved out for former number one pick out of Northeastern that everybody hoped would be a, you know, a top flight starting pitcher. He's become a top flight, you know, setup man and occasional closer and really been a successful one in an industry that doesn't have a ton of those guys that have sustained success in that kind of role. And some of what it's interesting, because I've been, you know, just like you have, you're looking at what Tyler Kinley has done the first couple of months of the season. I know Tyler got the loss. To me, it was a hard luck loss yesterday because he threw the ball really well again. He's had such an extraordinary start to the season. And when you look at what he's done, he hasn't given up a run at Coors Field. And you look at the list of guys who've had great, you know, say 2 month periods of time at the outset of a year, it's Kinley with Adam Ottavino. Adam Ottavino is prominently on those lists. A couple of times he started out like gangbusters. And so, yeah, he's one of the better Rockies relievers, probably historically in a setup capacity. And he's continued in that realm back east.
I love that you make that comparison too of Kinley and Otto. And we talked about in Sunday's post game show that stat and, you know, 16 of 17 scoreless outings and that sub one, almost sub half a run ERA between those two guys, but they both want the ball every day. Like I think Buddy said, you know, Kinley, or no, maybe it was someone else said, yeah, Kinley wants to pitch every day. Like he's going out there. He wants to do it. And, you know, I think that's true of Otto, who, you know, said he wants to play until he's 40. You know, he still thinks that, you know, he could go for 4 more years. Obviously it's a lot harder, but you're right. Those guys who can compile and they can last a long time. Like they've got such amazing value. And that's just a rarity in and of itself to play until you're 40 for a reliever that's right-handed. And he's not lefty. You can always do that if you're a lefty, but you're right-handed. That's pretty special.
I don't put it past him. Now Ottavino throws really hard and he still throws hard and he's been blessed with the ability. Look at Justin Verlander now coming off Tommy John, still throws really hard. Justin Verlander having a great year. He's in his late 30s. So there's certain guys that can maintain that velocity, but you know, he has that slider, which, you know, he throws like three different versions of it. So you get different breaks, horizontal and vertical with it. Sergio Romo is a guy that's lasted forever. Doesn't throw nearly as hard as, I mean, he doesn't throw hard at all, but he's lasted forever with that slider and kind of guile. And Ottavino still has a plus fastball to go along with that slider. So I don't put it past him being able to pitch, you know, close to 40. Absolutely not.
Yeah, he did mention Romo, and he did talk about, you know, that sweeper that he throws and some of the younger guys in the clubhouse calling him the OG of the sweeper because, you know, not that he necessarily reinvented himself, but he was in on all this analytics stuff, you know, pretty early and purchased his own equipment. And, you know, those companies were reaching out to him. And so he created his own little lab, you know, a couple of years before some teams were even able to do that. So, you know, when you do that, when you put that investment in yourself, it definitely pays off. So it'll be exciting to see how much longer he sticks around. Hey, maybe he comes back to Colorado for one more time. He likes those challenges. He likes the short porch at Yankee Stadium, Green Monster and left field at Fenway, and just Coors Field in general can be that challenge. He might be up for at least one more time.
Yeah, I remember he like rented out some warehouse in Brooklyn or something. Remember he was with the Rockies and set up some of the pitch track stuff and utilized that data, which is not a surprise if you know him at all, in that, as we said, he's a sharp guy and he wanted to utilize, you know, some of the new, not only metrics, but the new way of analyzing, you know, release and spin rate and all of that to maximize his ability. So, you know, tip of the cap to him for doing those things and kind of being ahead of the curve.
I think fourth all time in appearances for the Rockies. And he said he wanted it. He wanted to be number one. So yeah, if he does come back, maybe he does slot ahead of, I would guess it would be Brian Fuentes. I didn't go back and look, but I would say
I would think Steve Reed would be way up there in terms of appearances.
One of us is right.
Well, I'll tell you what. While you talk, I'm gonna see if I can look that up.
All right. Well, this conversation is getting me a little bit hungry, and that's kind of a good time to talk about Sexy Pizza. They've spent over 13 years in the Denver community with locations on Capitol Hill, Old South Pearl, Jefferson Park, Park Hill. They also have a location down in Trinidad, Colorado that's worth checking out too. Now, this is a hand-tossed deck oven pizza with made-from-scratch each morning dough. It is delicious. From someone who can be a bit of a snob with their pizza, this is legit. I go out of my way to go down to Denver to get that, or when I'm at the bar, I swing by Sexy Pizza. I also love that when you go to their website, www.sexy.pizza, here's why you want to do that. You can go to their about page and check out the donations link to find out how Sexy Pizza can actually support your cause. They love supporting local organizations and events. So make sure you go ahead and do that. And if you need a cleaning afterwards, flossing maybe isn't your forte, well, leave it up to our friends at Green Mountain Dental Group. They've taken amazing care of all of our DNVR members over the years, especially those who've made the permanent switch. They're going to leave you with a pearly white smile. We all want to be smiling at this time of the year. It's gorgeous out. You're going to spend the next 2-3 months outdoors while you want your smile to be pearly white. When you schedule a cleaning, x-ray, and exam with Green Mountain Dental Group, you're going to receive a free Sonicare toothbrush from Green Mountain Dental Group, located just 15 minutes from downtown Denver. Okay, Drew, I bought you enough time. I hope you've got the answer.
I'm looking right now.
I do like your pick, but I'm not gonna flip flop. I'm gonna stick with my guy and Brian Fuentes, 4 appearances. I think Steve did have at least one more year.
You know, our buddy Thomas Harding did a piece on his all-time 5 best Rockies relievers a couple of years ago.
Well, with innings pitched, I'm very good on the Google machine. I love my baseball reference. I know every page by heart. I almost know the Earls. Well, if we're talking about innings pitched, it's all the starters. But when it comes to appearances, as we said, Adam Ottavino, number 4, 361 games. Number 3, I don't think I would have gotten this one. I would have kind of forgotten to put it out of my brain. Matt Belisle, 392. At number 2, Brian Fuentes, and number 1, Drew Goodman was correct with Mr. Steve Reed at 461 games.
What do I win?
You got me one. I free beer at the corner of Colfax, New York at the DNVR bar.
Perfect. Okay. I'm in.
We need a Rockies flavor for Breckenridge Brew. They do an Avalanche Ale. They got the Broncos Country. I think there's even a couple Nuggets beers that they have. We got to see if there can be a Rocky type flavor. We'll have to bring you in as like the taste master. You should work on crafting the flavors and the notes. Let's see what kind of notes Drew Goodman.
You know what? I could partake in that for a little bit. I know some guys that will last a whole lot longer than I will in the beer tasting department.
There you go. I like that. I did want to pick your brain about Trevor Story bouncing back in a real major way there in Boston. Rough go. He was booed. Obviously, we had no doubt that he was not even going to figure it out, because that sounds like he lost it. No, I think he had a lot of things going on behind the scenes. Obviously, he just had a baby, changed his agency, going to a new market. You know, the lockout really changed a lot of different things. He's going from Arizona to Florida for spring training. So that can be a challenge. It was just a matter of time, and I'm glad he figured it out sooner than later, because he's broken out in a big way in Boston. And now he's everyone's favorite player, if you're a Red Sox fan.
He was taking a lot of heat. They're a passionate fan base. We were talking about that earlier. He got off to a slow start, and there's a lot of players around baseball have gotten off to a slow start. I'm happy. I like Trevor, and I'm happy that he had that weekend that he did, where we've seen it before, right? We've seen him go on these home run rampages, and so it's in there. He didn't all of a sudden become a bad player. He didn't all of a sudden, you know, forget, you know, how to swing a bat. Is he going to have periods where he, just like a lot of players, where he's 2 for 20 with a dozen punch outs? He will. And it'll happen again. But now at least it's such a grind mentally, but there's a reservoir of success with Boston that he can reach back upon. And then there's also the Boston fan that can say, well, you know, he carried us last weekend, and, you know, we see why, you know, we spent $140 million on him. For me, overall, I like to see it for Trevor individually, and I also like to see it to continue to throw darts at the idiocy that is advanced whenever a Rockies player who's successful in Denver moves on with the, oh, well, he's a Coors Field creation. I mean, it's just lazy in terms of not doing your homework, just like looking at Nolan and Larry Walker and Matt Holliday and all the players that moved on and then are quite successful. I'm happy in that regard also.
Yeah, that narrative definitely seems to have quieted down. LeMahieu did a lot of great work for that. Arenado, and now we're going to see.
Yeah, you still hear it. You hear it from national folks that should know better.
You're right.
At times, you know, or they'll be writing a piece about, you know, a Rocky free agent or potential free agent, and say, well, you know, the splits are like CJ Cron right now. You look at his splits, and he's hitting almost 400 at home, and I don't have it in front of me what he's hitting on the road. He's been fine on the road, but they're dramatic. You know, there's a dramatic difference. People are like, well, you know, I don't know. We think he's like a double-A player if he plays for Seattle or something. No, it's not how it works.
That's true. It won't die. You're right. There's always going to be somebody carrying that torch, if you will, going forward with that. I also imagine that for Story and anyone in those large markets, I hadn't considered it quite like this. And I know it's not entirely true. It's not airtight. But once you get booed enough, or you hear enough of your teammates getting booed, it probably loses some of its impact. You know, it's like someone who is shouting all the time. At a certain point, people will ignore you. They're just going to be able to block out that kind of shouting or that kind of noise, because it's very much normal, and it loses its effectiveness. Now, there are players who at a certain point will say, okay, I've kind of had enough of it. But, you know, if it doesn't happen quite as often, then it becomes more noticeable. But in those Northeastern markets, you get booed, you go, yeah, it comes with the territory. I mean, I think that even happened. I think Mickey got booed once in New York. So it's par for the course. And so I imagine the next time that happens, as you said, if he has one of those golden sombreros, it'll just be, okay, yeah, they're not happy with me, but I know the player I am, and it's really stuck off of Water's back.
I think every player has to have, you know, especially in baseball, really hard exterior. And I think that, you know, Trevor's smart enough to know that when he was going to a new city, particularly in the Northeast, that he was going to hear great cheers when things went well, and, you know, vociferous boos potentially if things did not go well. I mean, he's he's sharp enough to understand that, and he grinded. I mean, that's where you have to dig deep in being mentally tough and keep going out and posting up every day, and find a way to get through it. I mean, it's painful when you go for four or three strikeouts and you come back the next day and you put yourself in the lineup and you know and you don't have success again. That's what this game does to you. Also, I thought it was unfair that one day he was, I wasn't there, but I believe he was working out. And so they made it seem like he ducked the media after a game. And I just think that if it doesn't always match the timeline of a reporter, now there are times that players say, well, I was working out, I was getting treatment, and they hide in the trainer's room. We've seen that before. You've seen that in locker rooms post game, but that's not the history of Trevor Story. And I thought that was a little bit unfair. But you got to have a hard exterior, man. You got to be tough, and especially more so than ever before, because everybody seems to have the ability to throw their opinion out there and have it heard at some level because of social media. Going back to your original thought, he's a good guy. Trevor's a guy that you root for, and I'm glad that he was able to turn it around for the weekend. I'm sure he'll have success going forward with Boston.
Two Hall of Fame pitchers. Actually, I guess the St. Louis Cardinals now have three Hall of Fame pitchers. Adam Wainwright, we'll see what happens for him. Now Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina. Our friend of the show, John Boy, kind of said, maybe it's jump the shark, the position players pitching, this idea, like, maybe baseball needs to do something about it. It's still interesting. I'll say that. I don't know that anything needs to change. It just kind of is what it is. But have you gotten any sense about that of like, maybe we need to try to avoid something like this? Or is it too soon to kind of make that kind of indictment?
Position players jump on the mound in a blowout. I have no problem with it. The length of the season in baseball, twice as long as any other major sport. And you have to have fun. That's why you got into sports to begin with. It's easy. It's called, somebody said once, it's not called work ball, it's called play ball, right? So remember that. And if it's 18-0 and you can throw the Hall of Fame catcher on the mound, do it. It's entertaining for the fans. It's entertaining for both dugouts, quite frankly. When the Giants got they were getting their ass kicked in that game that Pujols pitched, it lightened the mood and it made it easier because they came to Colorado next. And I was talking to Gabe Kapler about this. And he said it made it much easier to kind of turn the page. Hey, it was one of those days in baseball. We got our ass kicked. We didn't do anything very well. And it was a blowout. And then we all got a chuckle out of seeing Albert on the mound. It's good. And sport is also about fandom, right? And you and I are talking about this days later. So it was impactful at some level for us because it provided entertainment. And if it happens again and Freddie Freeman one day in a blowout plus or minus for the Dodgers is on the mound, it'll get national attention. It'll be a good thing. I know that Buddy, hates that. He does not, the integrity of the game is really important. But Buddy has kind of eased up on that. And he's not going to throw a Sam Hilliard who used to pitch in college because he doesn't want to get him hurt because he thinks he's going to get too competitive and actually try to get guys out. As opposed to when he threw, Fuentes last year and, he kind of lobbed it in there. But it's entertaining. And you don't want to see it on a nightly basis because that means you're really bad, I guess. But if you're in one of those situations on the wrong end of things or maybe you're way up, as the Cardinals were against the Pirates the other day, there's nothing. From my standpoint, there's nothing wrong with it.
That is an interesting angle too on that, like, because you're right, Kapler did talk about it allowing them to turn the page. He actually misspoke when he was talking to us that day and he said a Hall of Fame pitcher, and he wasn't trying to call Albert Pujols a Hall of Fame pitcher, Hall of Fame player. And so that was funny. But Yeah, Hilliard is, you know, he's got that little bit of a pitching pedigree. But the guy, for anyone who's looking for some water cooler material, I did ask Buddy on this homestand, who's the person that's going to go out there on the mound in a blowout? And they've had a couple close ones. And twice, do you know who volunteered?
Well, he's not on the roster right now. I think Alan Trejo would have been the guy. You always look to the super utility kind of guy. You know, Garrett Hampson would be a name that I would think of to go out there. That'd be one of the first guys that, you know, would pop into my head. Now this goes way back. I'm jumping around here, and he may let this guy, I don't know if he'd let this guy do it. I'm kind of thinking out loud here, but I think for Rockies fans, it would be neat if Charlie Blackmon got on the mound. Now Charlie may be too serious to do something like that. But if I had to pick somebody, you know, off the top of my head, I would say a guy like Garrett Hampson.
Are there any pitchers that look like Charlie Blackmon? We know there's position players that go full beard, long hair. Brandon Marsh has kind of stolen his style. So I don't think there's any pitcher. So that would really look weird.
Well, Brian Wilson. Reasons. I mean, he doesn't play anymore, obviously, but Brian Wilson.
Got to dip back. Yeah, I don't know that he had his hair long enough. He definitely did have the beard with a couple, 2 to 3 bottles of Just for Men in it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So who is the guy?
The volunteer was Randall Grichuk. So I think twice now he stepped up and said, hey, if you need me out there, I'll go ahead and do it. So that also would be strange because he's got socks that go above the knees. So yeah,
that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Good guy.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. I'd also be remiss to talk about the passing of Angel. I haven't covered it yet, and I'm just curious if you have any stories from him or if you've read any books. I actually have not read Angel. Yeah. I've never read any of his books. I got to know him obviously from the Ken Burns baseball. He put out a book that he wrote with David Cohn, which was something that I had on my to-do list, but I never actually read any of his work. But he was an all-time legend and passed away at 101 years old.
I did not realize. Honestly, I didn't realize he was still with us, and I didn't realize that he was, what a life, 101. And he's one of the great, when you think of baseball literature, of which there has been volumes of fiction and nonfiction written about the sport of baseball. One of the first names that come to mind for me is Roger Angel. And I think that's probably the simplest and most apropos way that I can pay, you know, a small tribute to him. And I think that many people that have read about the game, that enjoy the game like you and I do, Patrick, and you say, well, who do you think of, you know, prominent novelists about the game of baseball? Roger Angel is always one of the first that I think would come out of people's mouths.
Yeah, he's great, and a lot of people have him on like top five lists as far as just personal, like their favorite books. And it did get me thinking about some of my favorite baseball books and books that have been on my to-do list or that are on my shelf. I don't know that we ever talked about that before, but do you have any particular favorite baseball books or books that are kind of they're on the shelf for you that you're thinking I got to get around to reading that at some point?
Again, there's so many, you know, great works of literature around the game, and there's some, you know, probably less celebrated works. One of the first ones that comes to mind that I read, it was, I'm going to butcher the title, something about coming home again, and it was a New York based guy, I believe it may have been his first venture at that point into writing. He had a writing background. Anyhow, it was about coaching his 10-year-old's Little League baseball team that played in Central Park. And he kind of felt already as his son was moving to 10 that he was trying to, you know, formulate a bond, and he was already worried about not losing him, but, you know, where the friends became that age, where friends became more important than hanging out with dad. And he coached this team in the summer, And it just struck a chord with me because when I first read it, my kids, my boys were in that, you know, that realm, 10, 8, and 5, probably at the time that I read it. And, you know, it brought me to tears at times. So I'm doing a bad job of remembering the name of it, but it's not always, you know, like, you know, The Natural, which I thought was a great read. You know, so many books that have been turned into movies also is typically are better when you're reading them. Bless you. Then, you know, ultimately the movie, but that's a book that jumps to mind, right away. I just read a book, that has baseball as a backdrop that I fantastic read. It's called The Art of Fielding. And I would, I've given it to, my oldest son, Jacob. I've given it to somebody else as a gift, another friend, as a gift called The Art of Fielding. I just read it several months back. Tremendous, tremendous novel that has baseball as a significant backdrop, in addition to, you know, a college campus and you know, coming to adulthood and that sort of thing. So anyhow, I've gotten down the road on literature and baseball literature, but Roger Angel, what a life.
If you have another copy of The Art of Fielding, I know a certain baseball team that it might behoove them to read it. Okay, was your book called The Way Home, Scenes from a Season, Lessons from a Lifetime by Henry Dunnow?
Yes, that's it. Did you read that or did you just look it up?
I'm good on the Google machine, man.
That's outstanding because there's been a number of baseball books that have home in its title, but that's the book.
I got you, man.
Great read.
Great. Yeah, I have to check that out. Good cover too.
You know, give it to your dad. Did he coach you, your dad, at all?
He did. Yeah, a couple years. Yeah.
Give it to your pop. I know you guys are you know, going to have a special night tonight and going to watch the documentary on Nolan Ryan. And I know your pop just moved out to Colorado. Go get that book on Amazon and give it to your dad. It'll be special for him.
That's cool. That's cool. Thank you. Yeah. I'll have to do that. I have a couple favorites and it's funny because we were talking about Kadri. It reminded me of this book. It's called The Pitch That Killed by Mike Sowell. And it's about, you know, Ray Chapman, 1919, the only player to ever, you know, die in a big league baseball game. And part of that book it goes into Carl Mays I think he was on the Yankees at that point. He also pitched with Boston, but Carl Mays was kind of a headhunter and it was, you know, hey, was he intentionally throwing at Ray Chapman? And, you know, you also learn about why the fact that, you know, pitcher gets a baseball and goes, you know, I don't like it, or a ball gets fouled off, and why they don't put it in play anymore is because they used to just keep using the same baseball over and over again, and the sun would be setting and be the twilight of the day, and you just couldn't see the baseball, and so you couldn't get out of the way of the baseball, and so all those things are kind of, you know, interconnected in that. So that book is amazing, learning a lot more about Ray Chapman's life. Clemente by David Moranis, of course, you know, is a great one, and a book that I've don't know that anyone else has ever read, but it's really interesting and it ties in Colorado Springs. I don't think they went to Denver, but it came out over a decade ago, called Spalding's World Tour, the epic adventure that took baseball around the globe and made it America's game, about by Mark Lamster. And it was just about A.G. Spalding, and, you know, he wanted to get his merchandise and stuff out there. And so they went literally all around the globe. They're on boats for days. They went to Egypt, and I think Cap Anson threw a baseball over the Sphinx. You know, someone bet him to do that, and he was able to do it. So that's a fun baseball book. That's pretty much an easy read.
There's a lot out there. I really enjoyed last summer during the All-Star festivities, the All-Star week in Denver, The Tattered Cover, which is right at McGregor Square, brought out a number of novelists and also just an enormous number of baseball themed books and had them out every day. And I bought a lot of stuff that particular week and had some great conversations with people about various works surrounding the game.
Yeah, that was a good one. One that's on my shelf that I want to read from a couple years ago from the National Convention for Saber was a book written by Robert Fitz, who's kind of become the new Robert Whiting as far as like knowledge about the history of Japanese baseball. And it's called, and the title alone goes, okay, this book sounds great. Banzai Babe Ruth, Baseball, Espionage, and Assassination During the 1934 Tour of Japan. You go, okay, I'm interested in this. So kind of ties a lot of things in there. It's similar to like The Catcher Was a Spy, all about Mo Berg. Yeah, and they, I actually saw the documentary about it a couple years ago, and they made it into a full-length film. I think Paul Rudd was in it. I guess he may have been the Mo Berg character in it. But yeah, there's so many great baseball books. There's just not enough time.
Not enough time for a lot of things.
Ain't that the truth? Well, hopefully you've got plenty of time to check out Drew's podcast. We got John Miller this week, I'm going to guess.
Yeah.
Yes.
I sat down with the legendary giant broadcaster. He's been a national broadcaster. He's been Orioles, Red Sox, Oakland A's, been with a lot of teams for, you know, John, I think his first year, did he tell me, was 74? John's been at this a long time, and he's excellent.
And he wears a Yomiuri Giants cap to the ballpark. I noticed that in San Francisco and in Colorado, given much love to a Japanese baseball team. So that ties in nice. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that conversation. I'm sure you'll have some thoughts on the Avs, maybe have some Chris Bryant news by the time that podcast drops on Thursday morning. It's always great. And so you always find great guests. And so this one, I imagine you held the microphone up to him and then he just went crazy. So you only asked two questions, but it's still probably one of your longer episodes.
Yeah. You know, John is like many of us, I've been accused of this too. John is somebody that doesn't need a lot of prompting, but he's great. I mean, great voice, great stories, interesting guy.
One of the great bloviators of all time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good word there.
There it is.
Well, make sure you're following our buddy Drew and listening to his podcast. Of course, the Drew Goodman podcast dropping each and every Thursday morning. Follow him on Twitter at DrewGoodman42. We are at DNVR_Rockies. At Patrick D. Lyons and at the Susie Hunter for our individual accounts. It's been great, Goody. Appreciate you coming on. Look forward to our conversation next week. Seeing at the ballpark again very soon here. But you know what they say about momentum? It's only as good as tomorrow's podcast. So we'll talk to you then.